Hingham Public Schools. And joining us today is Superintendent Paul Austin and members of his leadership team. Great to have you here with us again. Paul, could you introduce to us members of your team?
Oh, absolutely, Joe. And thanks for inviting us back. It's always a pleasure to work with you. I want to introduce the other members of our central office team. First is Dr. James Labilwa, is our assistant superintendent, and Dr. Suzanne Dennis, who is our director of student services, who joined us today and have a lot of information I'm sure you'll want to hear.
You know, the last time that we talked, Dr. Austin, we discussed the district rolling out its remote learning plan. So can you share with us where we are today and what your vision is going forward as we continue to stay at home?
Since we last talked, we've obviously started the rollout of our new plan, of our remote learning plan. But before we get going, I just want to have a moment to thank all of our staff, from our teachers to our support staff, to our leadership team, to our administrators, to our parents and our students, for the incredible work they've done over the last few weeks and what they're enduring. I couldn't be more proud of our organization and the work that they've done in a very short period of time. If we recall, the governor just about 2 weeks ago now had extended this closure directed us to then begin thinking about the remote learning plan. Once he had done that, this team went to work and they did amazing work in a very short period of time. Nothing's perfect. I think we talked about that last time. But that said, I'm incredibly proud of the work they've done. So yes, at this point, we did roll that out on Monday morning. Our teachers had done professional development over the last couple of weeks preparing for that. And I'm going to actually turn it over to Dr. Lilwa and Dr. Venice to talk more specifically about the plan itself. So Dr. Lilwa.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today about the work that we've done and the plan that rolled out, as Paul mentioned, Monday morning to our community. I think it's important to note that the plan itself was developed due to the COVID-19 school closure. And the reality is we are very thoughtful about the impact of this is having on the community. And so when we began to work on the plan, we first started with guiding principles that would sort of guide the work the district would engage in to develop the plan. And the first guiding principle was really a focus on the holistic needs of the community. So given the COVID-19 event, we recognized that our focus really had to be on the physical health, the safety, nutrition, the social, emotional, mental health of our students, families, and also our staff. I think we have to be really thoughtful of the social, emotional impact that this is having. We also were very thoughtful under that principle of the holistic need relative to equity issues, right? So we do not have every family in our community who has access to high-speed internet or digital devices to actually engage in the learning plan. So we were thoughtful around the provision of supports and services to those families to ensure that they could access the plan with a level of equity. And we also were thoughtful to maintain and really wanted to have as a part of that holistic view, connections, right? So schools are about community, right? Schools are about human connection and human interaction. And so we developed the plan, a part of that core principle was really ensuring ongoing connection between families and faculty. The second guiding principle really looked at how we would develop the remote learning plan. It was around our instructional model, which really had to shift. The organization really had to become agile and be able to move with the demands of the current events. And so we were thoughtful about our instruction. So initially, as we were working with the community, we were providing academic engagement activities, so opportunities for kids to engage in learning. But with the extension of the closure, the shift from the State Department of Education really began focused on the introduction of new learning and new concepts and content to the community. So our plan was focused on the delivery of carefully selected standards, which we would roll out to our community in a very systematic, thoughtful way. again, here we're thoughtful about access issues and kids' abilities across our community to have multiple devices going on at the same time, which is where our remote learning plan really began to focus on asynchronous learning. So there's really two types of instructional models relative to remote learning. The first is synchronous, where, you know, every Monday at 9, you'd log in for your English class, right? And you'd be there for 45 minutes live on screen with an exchange back and forth with the teacher. The other model was really asynchronous, and that we felt was more respectful of people's home lives, of people's availability to have multiple children on a device at the same time, trying to engage in synchronous instruction. So our primary instructional model is asynchronous relative to instruction, but given that principle, right, around the importance of community connection, we also opened the door for our faculty to engage in live synchronous opportunities for connection with kids. So our elementary teachers, for example, might be doing morning meetings live on Zoom with their classes. You might have our secondary teachers holding office hours live to give kids support and feedback around the work that's being submitted. So the plan really tried to blend both of those instructional models, the asynchronous means relative to our direct instruction of content. And that way it was always continually available to kids, even if you couldn't be there Monday at 10 for that class. The information, the teacher's videos or explanation or instructions would sort of be there for you. And we married that with synchronous connection, where we do give our community an opportunity to engage with their teachers or their counselors or their specialist teachers in a live format. The third principle really focused on contact. It focused on frequent contact, where our teachers be reaching out to members of the school community, as well as opportunities for more specialized contact for our kids who might be eligible for IDEA or special education supports and services, which Dr. Vinnis will talk about in just a minute. Thoughtful of our kids who are English language learners, right, and sort of their specific needs relative to remote learning, as well as our kids who are at high risk relative to Title I eligibility, and ensuring that our most at-risk kids are given the opportunity for additional supports and connections during the closure. And finally, the other part of that principle was really about enrichment. So giving kids the opportunity who want to go deeper or explore the content more thoroughly has the opportunity for extension and enrichment. The fourth guiding principle was around feedback, right? It was around as we shift instructional models, begin thinking about this remote learning plan, we had to embed in that a way for our teachers to provide targeted direct feedback relative to the work that the kids were submitting. And so the fourth principle really focused on that idea of contact. The final piece that I'll sort of talk about is the expectations we have, right, around live synchronous instruction or live synchronous connections. The reality is that no online model is perfect. No system can guarantee complete safety. And so we were very thoughtful of the level of confidentiality that whatever we chose to be the medium, the platform, whether it's Google Meet or Zoom, sort of has the appropriate protections. We're essentially going into people's homes, right, with life happening all around them. And we had to be really thoughtful that if a family wants to engage in that, there are certain expectations that we have relative to respecting privacy rights and ensuring that the meeting or the exchange is not recorded without the consent of everyone. We have laws in Massachusetts relative to video audio taping people without consent or knowledge. And so we had to be really thoughtful around all the potential places where this could be more of a challenge for us. And so it did take us some time. It took us about a week. And that's sort of a general overview of the general education learning plan, which I will say is very complementary to our students, our special education model, which I'll let Dr. Vinnis talk about.
Dr. Vinnis.
Hi, thank you for having me. Just as Dr. LaBillowa was saying, the procedural manual for providing virtual special education services was built on top of the remote learning plan. So it's layered on top of that. So all of the elements in terms of instruction, responsibility, guiding principles are all completely relevant to the work that our special educators are also required to do. What we focused on in our messaging to them was really the loss or potential loss of this feedback loop between teacher and student. And in the field of special education, that is, I arguably, this is my opinion, is one of the most important facets of the work that we actually do. We are responding to students' behavior, we're responding to their memory, we're responding to their approach, their emotional challenges associated with initiation, and a special educator related service provider is responding to that in the moment in order to adjust their practices. And when we move to an online platform, that piece is really at risk of not being a primary mode of instruction, and that really is the foundation of the work we do. So we spend some time researching what that looks like, and then I gave all 70 plus educators in our district a professional development on what that means in order to ensure that you're maintaining this feedback loop even through asynchronous learning, and what are some ways that that can look like. And thankfully, a lot of the platforms that they're using permit students to engage in this looping, either through writing or audio or picture or whatever skill they happen to have in order to demonstrate their knowledge about a skill. So there may be a delay in the feedback, but we're able to maintain some level of feedback looping to make sure that the instruction continues, even though it's asynchronous.
You know, it is amazing, and you all should be commended for implementing and rolling out this plan literally within a week following Commissioner Riley's guidelines. That is just phenomenal. What has been the reaction of parents? What kind of feedback are you getting in the early beginnings of the stages here?
I'll turn that over to Dr. Lubilwa first. I think we've all heard some, but Dr. Lubilwa has been probably closer to that than I have.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. You know, the vast majority of the feedback has been incredibly positive. We've heard from families that, and remember, the design itself was really intended to be flexible, to sort of meet the needs of the family. And given the vast majority of families, you know, no matter what we do, the reality of human behavior is that we're not gonna please everybody, right? So, but the vast majority, I will say, have been incredibly complimentary and positive relative to the ability of kids to understand what the expectations are. That was a big concern of people. How will my third grader know how to go into Google Classroom and do what they have to do? But the way the teachers really handled the rollout really needs to be, I have to commend that again. They work really hard to make us look good. I mean, that's the reality, right? As we are able to do the work we do because we have such a deep talent pool in our classrooms, right, that we're able to draw on their expertise and their knowledge, right, to help the rollout able to be sort of consumed and sort of taken in by the families that it was intended to. So the vast majority has been positive. I think what the current sort of feedback is right now is pushing us to be really reflective of the grading model, particularly at the secondary level. You know, we had determined a credit, no credit model based on the commissioner's guidelines. So again, the commissioner of education in his rollout plan, or relative to suggestions and guidelines for remote learning, talked about sort of this credit, no credit concept. You know, that was a sort of an agreeable model for sort of term three. But as if we think about the potential of an extended closure, if we think about, again, sort of kids being out of school through the end of the school year, which very well could be a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it very well could. We're now currently thinking through, particularly at the high school level, sort of what that looks like, right? Will it stay on credit, no credit? Will we adjust that? And the only sort of positive thing I can say is we're certainly taking everybody's feedback that we're getting around that and being really thoughtful. On the whole, it's rolled out beyond our expectations.
I would agree with everything that Jamie said. I think what's unique in the field of special education is we have families who are legitimately really struggling right now, managing some of the challenges that they experience with their children who have some developmental challenges. And we feel for them, and we want to offer as much help as we can virtually. But that doesn't mean that their experiences are going to be easy. So we are making efforts to try to help them develop routines and schedules and any picture cueing they happen to need. We're trying to gear suggestions for instruction around everyday things that would go on in a household, especially activities of daily living, you know, family time, board game time, cooking. There's so many activities that families do every day where instruction can be embedded in it. But what I'm also trying to really clearly message to families is that our providers are clinicians. They have gone through extensive training. We have speech and language pathologists with master's degrees from Mass General Hospital. We have psychologists who are all at the PhD level. So we have like really, really highly skilled educators in our district. And I don't want families thinking that they are somehow being tasked with replicating what these highly trained, skilled professionals are doing. And some of the feedback that I'm hearing is some of that stress. How am I supposed to do this? Is it, you know, and it's like, you don't have to. Our mission is to try to prevent as much regression as possible. We know that there's going to be some. And if we can help families create structure and meaningful activities for their children, then that's what we're going to help them do. But I first really want to make sure that they do not feel like it's their job to replicate the professional skills that our faculty are able to do.
You know, Joe, I would add a couple of things. I agree with both of them, and they articulated very well kind of the feeling around the community. What I've certainly heard from parents is a real grateful nature of an importance around the support of our teachers, how impressed they have been with the teachers reaching out to our students. And we've really gained a tremendous amount of knowledge and how important they are to the lives of our students. Mm-hmm. You know, the students are, I've been in some of the online work that they've done in their Google Classrooms and seeing the comments. The students are incredibly excited to hear from their teachers and to have that contact with them. And I think to the extent possible, we're trying to provide that normalcy, that regular structure that people are used to. There is a comfort in this. This is the heart of the community of schools.
Oftentimes when you have disruption of this magnitude, it gives one perhaps an opportunity to look at what do we retain in the post-pandemic and what do we seize upon new models going forward. And I'm curious to know, and Dr. Venice, I'd love to get your perspective on professional development, which has always been a challenge in terms of how do you find time carved out in the school year to give teachers adequate professional development opportunities. Might there be a window, might there be a new platform in which to support our teachers going forward in the post-pandemic era?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like we've already started that a little bit. Just a little example is I had a new role launching this year, and I couldn't be at multiple faculty meetings at the same time. And I really wanted to be the one to articulate the responsibilities of these individuals. And, you know, it was a new job for no one in the district was going to understand what this role was. And so I felt the responsibility to take that on myself. and I couldn't be at multiple faculty meetings that were running at the same time. And so I created a narrated PowerPoint and sent it to the principals to run it during their meeting so that they were hearing from me. And then there were relevant slides that went along with the information I wanted them to have. It was imperfect. There were a lot of glitches, but there was like learning that occurred from doing that. And that is something that we can certainly continue doing. And in addition, absolutely, to be able, I resisted it, right? A little kicking and screaming to get 70 plus people on a Zoom call with me while I ran a professional development. That was a little, it was new for me. But now that I did it once, I feel like I can do it every week if they need me to do it. So we certainly have opportunities to really grow in that realm. I think we also have opportunities to grow in how we think about homework. If it's asynchronous, you know, I mean, I just think there's a lot of really good ideas that are going to come out of this, but I also very much long for the normalcy of sitting with a student and working with them in person.
I think that's one thing that we all noticed, Joe. You know, we've been doing almost daily administrative team meetings by Zoom. And I think it's safe to say that we're all craving that human interaction. Zoom is great. And you know, it works really well during this time when we have to social distance and we have to be very cautious about those things. I would say at the same time, we do long for time that we're actually sitting in our offices where we can have our, like for my office, we have a Monday morning meeting, and I don't know we could ever say we missed them, but I think I'd love to get back to that very soon and to have that interaction in person, which is so important to all of us. So I think, to go along with Dr. Vinnis just said, there may be some things that we really truly learn that we can do more efficiently out of what we learn on this time. I also don't want to underscore the importance of that interaction and that live person interaction, but we don't know how this is going to be the new norm when we come out of this and what that's going to mean for the future. I think we're all going to have to adjust to a very different way of life at that time as well.
Dr. Labawa.
Yeah, I mean, I often, I'm a bit of a thinker, right? So I can get lost in my brain. And I think when we come out of this, there's sort of lessons learned relative to the ability of our faculty to be agile with workstations that can move with them, the ability to have technology there with them at home. Many of our teachers have old school desktops sitting in their classrooms, right? And so we had to distribute a number of Chromebooks to ensure that our faculty, so that I think was a learning opportunity for us, that if this ever was to happen again, or if we're thinking about sort of crisis planning on a bigger scale, our technology infrastructure and our ability to turn on a dime, we got it done, right? I don't want to sort of get that wrong, that was sort of somehow a misstep or a failure on our part. It wasn't, but I think what came out of that was a real opportunity to think through our technology infrastructure. To what extent are we maximizing the technology that we have? To what extent do we have teachers? And I think what became evident as we transitioned was a good proportion of our faculty actually had active Google Classrooms up and running, right? So the professional development and sort of the technology support that was offered by Caroline Ferris and Lauren Sioka, I want to give them sort of a shout out with you, were instrumental in training our faculty. Beyond the initial trainings, they held help desk office hours via Zoom where teachers could log in, ask questions, get sort of human to human support and connection while problem solving how to best meet the needs of our students. And I think when we're out of, when we come out of this, there's opportunities relative to technology and our infrastructure and really our systems that right now are paper-based and sort of really needing to sort of be forward-thinking and sort of how do we make that, where can we find sort of operational efficiency so the organization really runs more smoothly. The fact that we're able right now to maintain some semblance of normalcy and have our daily meetings, connect with our principals, make sure that the principals are connecting with their school communities, that our teachers are getting what they need. That's the work we do when we're there in person. Right. And so I think when we come out of this, the opportunity for growth is really around technology and infrastructure. But I think the opportunity for celebration and reflection is that we did it. Right. We did it. This is a generational event. Never before in recorded modern history has public school districts, not only in Hingham, but across the nation, literally had were asked to transform public education literally overnight. Let's be real, right? So that, I mean, that's profound. When we return to sort of that sort of the social nature of who we are as humans, and we have that need met, I think one of the things that will come out of that will be a celebration and an appreciation that we survived, right? We came out the other side and the culture is stronger for it. We now better appreciate human connection. We now better appreciate the role that our teachers, our educators, our support staff, our cafeteria workers, our bus drivers, we better appreciate the roles they play in our lives. One of the things that's getting me through is recognizing the situation for what it is. I can do that really because I have a level of safety and security, and everybody here as well. But we recognize that that's not what's happening in all of our homes, right? We have people who are sick. We have people who are getting sick. Our ability to provide meals to our students that need it and give grab-and-go lunches within a day of the shutdown, right? Let's be real. The organization's ability to be as responsive as we were, I hope, I mean, I really do hope, at least for me, it's a sense of pride and a sense of I would never want to have lived through this with a different group of people.
My heart goes out to our high school seniors. What can you say to them, particularly those seniors whose aspirations for college, maybe they're taking AP classes and what's going on, and what can you share with them?
Yeah, I'll start that. I said said this last time we met, Joe, you know, my heart goes out to them. I know this is an incredibly important part of their lives, and they're missing that. And I think any one of us would do anything we could to make this not happen. That said, I think this is an important time in history, and I hope they're able to reflect upon all the other parts that are happening around them right now and try to make sense of that as their place in the world is, you know, changing right now. The reality is for us, we're going to do whatever we can to try to bring celebration to them. I made that promise before. We're going to do whatever we can, and we haven't got a plan for that yet, but we will begin to talk about that very soon, of what does this look like for them. We do not want them to just walk away and say, we've done our last day of education, hang on, and nobody cares. Well, we do, very much so, and we want to celebrate with them. I'm hoping that we can come back sooner than later, and if not, then at least have an alternative plan to be able to celebrate that, if not in May, if not in June, then when? But we'll certainly plan on doing that. But my heart goes out to them. We understand how hard this is for them to understand that they're missing their prom, all the things that go with senior graduation time. And certainly there's no replicating I can do. There's nothing I can do to make that better at this very moment. But we are incredibly dedicated to seeing this through with them. And to celebrate one way or another, we will celebrate with them.
I mean, I would add, I mean, to echo Paul's point, I think the message is we see you, right? We see you. We know the struggle you're having. We share the pain. I mean, we have watched you grow for the last 13 years. We've celebrated your successes. We've posted on Facebook, celebrated via social media. We've also been there to support you through your failures and the opportunities to learn when things don't go the way you think it's gonna go. And that's hard, not only for them, for you as students and for their families and parents, but it's also hard for the educators, right? Who have dedicated a career to inspiring a love of learning and growth in kids, and to sort of have that natural celebration begin to occur when we get to fourth term. Seniors can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Graduation is coming, and nobody does graduation like hang on. I mean, it's a beautiful event. It's incredibly well done, and it's a point of real celebration for our community. The reality is, as Dr. Austin mentioned, our goal is to find a way to celebrate you as best we can. And please know, I don't want anyone to ever feel as if you're not seen, you're not heard, that you're not a part of our thoughts and our planning, because you are. And the reality is we've had to transform our instructional model for teaching and learning in a week. And so now that that's done, we're now into the launch of the plan. We're now beginning to think about what's next.
Dr. Venice. Final words?
Final words is there's a lot more work to do. volume one of that manual was real. I expect there to be maybe three. And one of them is going to be our transition when we return, which is going to require extensive planning all on its own. So I would imagine more changes to come. I would imagine more improvements in our practice as teachers get more and more acclimated to teaching this way, which is really new for them. So we need to give them a little bit of space, some learning time, some processing time. And I really only think that they're going to get better and better at it based on what we've seen so far. I wouldn't have been able to do what they are able to do. They are showing like incredible creativity. I'm proud of them. I'm proud to lead them.
The importance to all of us working together, even through differences that are difficult, are really what's paramount at this time. And I think we're going to do that, and we've done it so far. And I think in the end, we really will be stronger.
With that said, let's continue to stay in contact with each other, because we certainly want to come back and visit the progress and see how we are making our way and the adjustments that you're making along the way. But right now, again, this is incredible, impressive work that you are doing, Hingham Public Schools, and we commend you for this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
All right, stay healthy. Have a great week.
You as well.